I'm Carrie Bradshaw, and this is Sex in the... Just kidding, it's the Samantha Diaries.
I'm a trisexual. I'll try anything once. F*** me badly once, shame on you. F*** me badly twice, shame on me. This guy is very sour, like asparagus gone bad or something. Job for nothing.
Hello, honeys. Welcome to a bonus episode of Samantha Diaries. It's not quite, it's just me, it's Julianne. I just wanted to check in and say hi to everybody, and I want to start a new series. Just not quite Sex in the City related, but sex related. I have a few articles of things I've written in the past like year or so that are sex related, and what better way to share them and talk about them than on this podcast for Sex in the City people. But since I'm already here, we do have a bit of Sex in the City news. As you all know by now, it's been probably like a month or so since it's been announced, but we are getting in Just Like That season 2, so look out for Parker and I to come back whenever that is. Probably the end of the year, maybe early next year, we don't know. I believe SJP and her husband are still working with Plaza Suite, their Broadway show in New York. But hopefully we'll get some filming scenes this summer, I'm assuming. And also, we got a little interview with Miss Kim Cattrall, our girl Samantha, from Variety magazine this past week, and it's nothing super groundbreaking or anything that the hardcore fans probably don't already know, but there was some juice, there was some tea spilled. It's for once she doesn't quite throw the former show or her former castmates under the bus like she used to, but she just kind of pretty much said that she was not asked to be part of the reboot, which, why would she be? She knew, we all knew she wanted nothing to do with the franchise itself for a long time, and as well as the showrunners knew that, so why would she be asked? But basically, she was promoting her new stuff with Queer as Folk, that reboot, and as well as How I Met Your Father. And yeah, she's pretty much just, as she has said before, she's done with playing Samantha Jones. And, but yet she does feel the love from the fans who miss her, and she has not watched And Just Like That, she says, which, why would she? And, but she has heard, she says, about how she was, her character was written off, with the fight between her and Carrie, and thought that was strange, she says, thought that was a strange way to go about Samantha, and that wasn't the Samantha that she played, she claims. One interesting tidbit I did really love, and I do understand where she was coming from, and that, like, Kim Cattrall basically did not care for the storyline of Samantha for the third movie that ended up not happening because of that. But basically, which I think was no big secret, we all kind of heard about it before, that along with the big death and everything else, essentially they were going to have Samantha start receiving unsolicited dick pics from Brady Hobbs, which at the time he would have been like 14 in the series. Or in the franchise, I should say. And that's just so icky. And I think that's Michael Patrick King just trying to be funny and weird and not working. But yeah, and Kim Cattrall just wasn't, she just didn't care for it. That's basically why she said she wanted nothing to do with it after that. And I totally understand that. Her idea, however, was kind of interesting. Or I should say her PR rep idea was interesting. She wanted Samantha, who owns her PR company, she said, maybe she would have to sell it because of financial woes. 2008 was tough. Some people are still recovering. She had to sell it to some guy who's wearing a hoodie, and that's the dilemma she has. I mean, that's a scenario that was kind of off the top of one of my rep's heads, and I thought that was a great idea. That's a conflict instead of an underage boys, and then she trails off in the interview. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea. I think Kim Cattrall kind of got tired of being the butt of the joke a lot, which I totally understand. And Yeah, she was just kind of done with it. And as she said before, she just, in her heart of hearts, knew she was done playing the role. And that's why she didn't want to do it anymore. And that's why she's affirmatively saying no to the future, and which we all knew that she's definitely not coming back. But, yeah, I mean, I will say, like I said before, she did kind of keep herself a little bit poised this time. And when she was asked if Sarah Jessica had said that if she decided to play Samantha again, she wouldn't be okay with that. And the interviewer asked if that hurt her feelings. And she goes, I don't think I read it, which normally she would probably have a fit and talk some shit about SJP like she has in the past, but she didn't, which was great. She does say that she found it a little bit odd that they're continuing the character without her playing it, which, I mean, I don't know how else they would have really went about it. Not like they're going to kill Samantha off, so I don't know what else she kind of expected, but... And she was asked if she was ever friends with her Sex and the City co-stars, or was it always contentious? And all she said was, I guess it's how you define friends. I think we were colleagues. My colleagues aren't my friends. It was professional. So, I mean, no, nothing really jaw-dropping that we haven't heard before. We always kind of knew that it seems like she, Kim Cattrall, whether you believe her or whether you believe the other side, but it seems like I personally think she ostracized herself, it sounds like to me. But yeah, she just talks about how it's a powerful thing to decide that something is no longer for you and to say no. And I definitely agree with that. I give her a lot of credit for that. And yeah, good for her. She seems happier. We miss her. I wish there was something Samantha related that we'd ever see her again, but that's in the past. So yeah, that was that little tidbit of news that we got this week. And as for the reason why we're here today, going on a year ago, I had written a piece about this movie called Saint Maud. If any of you guys are horror fans, you know Parker and I are big horror fans. That's kind of how we met in the first place. And yeah, this really great movie about this young girl who kind of has had a rocky past. It's not explicitly clear in the film what happened, but it's implied that she was a nurse that possibly hurt someone or got into some trouble, was just maybe a bad apple a bit, and a party girl kind of, and she finds God again. And in the film, she's taking care of this woman with cancer, played by Jennifer Ely, and basically just takes her faith a little bit too far. And if for those of you who have seen the film is, it could be interpreted in a thousand different ways. It could be interpreted through mental illness and seeing the character of Maud. Essentially, is she really talking to Satan, or she thinks she's talking? Because it's a very dark version of God, which is something that we really don't see in American cinema, especially. Or is she just imagining all this in her head, and she's taking this religious extremism to this really unhealthy degree? And by the end of the film, she, spoiler alert, is up in flames. And but for me, when I saw it for the first time, and I think it's not, I mean, that much of a stretch to argue that the film is kind of about a sexual awakening within a young woman. And I think that any young woman who's in her 20s or early 30s or whatnot can relate to that. And she's not getting it from maybe the healthiest sources, so she's getting it from God. And let me just read you my article, and then we'll talk. Her body shivers, thuds to the floor. She's heavy breathing. A satisfied smile spreads across her face. On the surface, one would think that that description came straight out of an erotic script like 9 1/2 weeks, or served as the inspiration for a young adult coming-of-age novel about a young woman exploring her body for the first time. However, those moments of eruptive, orgasmic pleasure are the key elements of Saint Maud, A24's recent contribution to the religious horror subgenre that has much more on its mind than merely God-fearing. Quote, elevated horror, ... literally. And A24 knew exactly what they were doing when they cheekily touted, quote, your savior is coming, for the film's marketing campaign tagline. In the film, the titular young, single Maud, played by Morfydd Clark, is a newly converted, devout Christian that takes her faith a little too seriously. She becomes a caretaker for a dying patient that often mocks her love for God, and by love I mean literal orgasmic episodes, maudgasms, if you will, in which she claims God is physically in her. She quivers, her body weakens, there's more heavy breathing and back arching and gasping. We discover little about Maud's past, aside from, did she kill someone? Opening flashback, but the sense of sexual repression is overwhelming. Her only sexually penetrative encounter in the film, involving an actual human being, is visibly unsatisfying and ends horrifically. She seems constantly disappointed in said encounters and seems to crave something otherworldly that she looks for in, quote, God. Her patient Amanda even taunts Maud as far as describing her godly obsession as Heavenly Father's warm, hard, pulsing, and then she stops. Dick. Before an offended Maud slaps her across the face. A surface-level reading of the film would imply that Maud had an unethical past and uses her alleged newfound faith to restore her morality, while a more affronting reading of the film implies that she's just looking for something that most young, single women are searching for, mind-blowing orgasms to enhance her deepened sexual repression. I'd go as far as to say that Maud's search for the unattainable O is really what she seeks in God. Maud wants to have sex with God. There, I said it. It's dirty, probably even offensive to some, but it's honest. I've got way more important things on my mind than fun, she boasts. But does she? Lots of hetero women having sex with men are never afforded orgasmic pleasures in life nearly as much as they should be. So who could blame Maud for aiming higher? As a woman in my early 30s myself, with way fewer amazing sexual experiences under my belt than I hope to have up until this point in my life, I share Maud's desperation. Awkward, unsatisfying, stingy, inattentive, and/or traumatic encounters with partners can, and probably will, permeate many sexually active people's experiences. But especially so for young women, in which so often our bodies are more complicated when it comes to reaching that level of euphoria, and are too often neglected the proper education or attention to achieve it. Studies suggest almost 60% of us have faked it in our day. And tying it back to Sex and the City, if you guys recall in season 2, episode 4, they shoot single people, don't they? The infamous one where Carrie gets caught looking like something came out of a drain in a magazine photo. And the question, the through line of the whole thing is, are we faking more than orgasms? Are we faking entire relationships and our own happiness? Should the hetero ladies of the world have to pull a Maud and turn to God just to feel a religious experience during our physical romps? Maud's desperation for any connection, let alone a sexually gratifying one, is always met with humiliation. Maud is quietly envious of Amanda's lovers, yet Amanda teases her relentlessly for it. She jerks off a random dude in the bar bathroom and gets nothing out of it. Attempts at smiling at strangers are one-sided. But the worst of all is her only attempt at actual intercourse with a man, who she vigorously rides, while her shirt stays on, and who she doesn't allow to touch her breasts. As her PTSD flashbacks creep in during the encounter, she hops off the guy and ends it. She says no when he tries again, but he rapes her. Maud calls to God and begs to not let her fall again, as if she was to blame. As socially awkward as Maud is, and she is very awkward, none of her dissatisfaction is by fault of her own. Internalizing needs and suppressing sexuality is ingrained in young women from day one of womanhood. If you're sexually curious and exploratory of your body, you're told you'll never grow up to be wife material. If you're shy, choosy, or even abstinent, well, you'll be inexperienced and boring in a sack when your time does come. You're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. And at a certain point, when you've hit your so-called sexual prime, aka prime baby making your so 30s, which is a ridiculously limiting notion to begin with, but bear with me. You're supposed to have gained enough sexual confidence to know what you like and be able to communicate that with other people, with partners. But it's the trappings of either not wanting to be intimidating, domineering, or, God forbid, so enthralled in your own desires that we neglect the needs of our male bed cohabitants and get branded as less than stellar in bed that continues to haunt our encounters. It's true. Something inherently selfish comes with the act of sex for both parties. Why else would either of us show up but to hopefully get off, right? However, even as modern feminism favors, quote, getting hers, and evolves past slut-shaming, heterosex, by design, still can feel tainted by the bending over backwards, literally, to please the guy. While not wanting to look, act, or taste anything less than porn star perfect. To quote this writer, I'm not one of those people who blame the patriarchy for everything from office temperature to traffic jams, same, but I do think that from a young age, women internalize the idea that being assertive makes you a bossy, controlling bitch. We are taught that we should sacrifice our needs in favor of a man's, or else risk pushing him away / dying alone. By the way, that quote was from Carly Sciartino, from a Vogue article from November 2019. And the dying alone part is key here. I mean, look how Maude ends up at the end of the movie. And even throwing it back to Sex and the City, that episode, the same one. Miranda's fear is to die alone, that her cat's going to eat her when she dies. There's just always this inherent fear of women dying alone because they're not willing to or not good enough to please a man. Maude is so jaded with her quest for sexual euphoria with men at this point that she's given up. Never the size queen. She even quips at one of Amanda's friends that he could have an 8-inch cock for all she cares, because she knows no quality that any dude could possess has the power to give her the ecstasy that she so longs for. Only God gives her that. A coded masturbatory session in her bed, looking visibly horny with scratches all over her body, as if something was in the bed with her, she's fuller, kind of dirty, of his love than ever before, and her body levitates off the ground. No other humanly pleasures have ever held a candle to that for her. Similarly to how many of us act during that off chance we do finally get that mind-blowing sex we've been craving our whole lives, Maude's behavior becomes erratic. God appears to speak to her and tells her to prepare to prove her devotion to him, and she's completely whipped. Quote, can't shake the feeling that you must have saved me for something greater than this, end quote. She douses herself with flammables, burns herself to a crisp, and becomes his martyr, or so she believes, or dies believing. All for some exceptionally holy dick. Moral to the story, educate yourself, listen to, communicate with, and stop repressing your lady partners when it comes to giving them the best sex they've ever had in their lives, guys. And you'll never have to worry about us turning to God. So, yeah, that's my article of St. Maude and entitled Your Savior is Coming, St. Maude and the Search for the Unattainable Orgasm. This piece was originally published for Daily Grindhouse last year. It was published behind a paywall, and which, fuck a paywall. But yeah, I wanted to share it here with you guys, and I hope that you at least have seen St. Maude, because I just spoiled the fuck out of it, or else you are inspired to after hearing what I had to say about it. But yeah, I don't know what we're going to be calling this little series, but I will be back a few more times to narrate some articles I've written about sex, and hopefully we can get Parker back here again and we can do a little reunion before we have a new season of And Just Like That. But until then, bye, honeys.
Honey, they don't call it a job for nothing.